Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Hey, everybody. My name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media, we talk a lot about fan culture and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Tramfest, everybody's talking about Tramfest. Oh, it's Tramfest, everybody's talking about it.
Gibbs, you like pro wrestling? Wow, we like pro wrestling too. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. I am in the bubble. He is not.
I'm in the bathrobe.
You're in a. Yes, you're
in
very,
the bubble. I'm in the bathrobe.
You're very Lebowski-esque. You need a white Russian in that outfit.
Lebowski didn't go straight mustache. Like I've truly.
What is with that?
What is with it?
Yes.
Okay, so are you familiar with the handlebar mustache and culture?
I am.
Yes, it's a whimsical and fun mustache.
It's not that whimsical and fun.
No, it is. Thank you very much.
It's for pretentious hipsters. That's what it is for.
No, it's okay. I'm sorry.
I grab a washboard and join Mumford and Sons.
This is good. Facial hair can't help you, Hawkins. But no. in my case, facial hair does things for my face that frames it better.
If I got facial hair, I'd look like Dex from FTR.
Yeah, so I mean that's the thing. It's like I can grow a good mustache that actually frames my face well.
No,
so I'm doing
no,
it.
I'm hoping you know.
If you got it, rock it is what I say. And don't yuck someone's yum is also what I say. And you're doing both right now.
Get some.
Why are you such a hater?
Because I'm good at it.
Oh my god, no. If it's not my mustache, it's the professional wrestling industry, which you revile. It's like, why do we even watch wrestling, you know?
I'm a misanthropic jerk, I guess. I don't know.
Is this Are we doing our
now
therapy?
It's therapy. No, now
yeah,
it's therapy.
We're doing our therapy. Absolutely. No, tell me more about that. Where does that feeling come from?
No, Jeff? No. As you know from our pre-show talk, us alphas don't need therapy.
Yeah, no.
Beta types.
No, right. No, therapy is us alphas. Yeah. He tried to get that past me. He got a little bit further this time.
Yeah.
I stopped it before it got into the building.
No, we were talking
therapy about... is just for people who are broken, you see.
Well, no, we were talking jobs and how downward trajectory of our salaries tends to go with not being as angry as we used to be.
Yeah, no, I was quipping it, but it's partially true that as I've become more mellow as a person, I'm making less money.
Yes. Yeah. And it got to do with therapy jokes and stuff like that. But, you know, hey, if it works for you, it works for you. No, I was going to tell you, get some 1920s clothes, you know, maybe a top hat.
You know,
play a washboard in a band somewhere, you know, go full hipster. Come on.
Okay, Jeff. Well, I'm you know sorry. What? If you want to see me play in a band, it's great that you mentioned that.
Okay, please
you
get your plug.
See me at Albuquerque Tram Fest, the third longest tram in the world. We'll have the longest music festival ever. Because we have Wings of Tartev and the little crappy tram in Dubai, they're not doing a music festival. Like this is the longest music festival, the third longest tram, the longest tram in the hemisphere, Western Hemisphere. And it's happening. It's going down at Sandia Peak Aerial Tramway, Tram Fest 23.
Will you be using mustache wax on that thing?
Maybe. I'm still I don't think I need to. Honestly, I think it looks just fine in this.
You know, for the little curls up and
this
stuff.
This has so little to do with Tram Fest. honestly, it's at best. This aside is minimally adjacent to Tram Fest, the number one tram-based music festival in the world.
What if they want
9 days of peace, love, and trams?
What if they want mustache rides at the Tram Fest, Chris?
Well, then they can scan the QR code and come to talk to me after the set. Maybe we'll sneak into the New Mexico Ski Museum.
Oh, that one was too easy. Starting with Attention Must Be Paid, because we had a couple of passings in tangential wrestling, actually. Two people who participated in the Battle Royal at WrestleMania 2. If you've ever seen that, kids, it's... what they did was they brought in NFL players to co-mingle with the wrestlers to see who was really tougher. One of the participants in the actual Battle Royal itself, Russ Francis, former tight end for the San Francisco 49ers during the Joe Montana days. He, the son of Ed Francis, one of the main promoter in the Hawaii area for a number of years out there, passed away tragically in a plane crash. In a small plane he was flying with an instructor or something to that effect in Lake Placid, New York. And then earlier today, legendary linebacker from the Chicago Bears, Dick Butkus, passing away. He was a referee for that same match. Does the name Dick Butkus ring any bells for you, Chris?
Yes, it's a very memorable name.
Well, no, I mean in terms of, because he had a very long career as an actor as well in the 80s, and you pulled out a MacGyver reference last week.
I did. Now, I know who Dick Butkus is, but like I can't even put a name to it.
I will give you a MacGyver reference if you'd like as okay. well. Are you a MacGyver fan?
I might have watched a lot of MacGyver in college. Well,
when MacGyver,
so the memories are a little fuzzy, but they're there.
Okay, when MacGyver decided to become a professional boxer, Dick Butkus was his coach. He's also
I'm going to rewatch that episode. That sounds like a good one.
He was also on a number of 80s sitcoms. He was on Hang Time in the late 80s, early 90s on NBC Kids show. He played he was on My Two Dads as the owner of the diner on there. I mean, if you he was on, from my childhood, he was on a lot of Miller Lite commercials with Bubba Smith and the less filling tastes great type things. I mean, quintessential, you need a football coach or something like that, you usually hire Dick Butkus. He was in Any Given Sunday and Necessary Roughness. He was in the original Longest Yard.
Yeah, no, okay, now I'm seeing him.
He was also an original coach in Vince McMahon's original XFL, because Vince McMahon was doing the whole tough, we are hard-nosed football stuff. And Dick Butkus, you know, legendary 60s football player, decided to bring him in. He couldn't coach worth a darn. Didn't last the entire season. But, when I was growing up as a kid, you know, everybody's father, you know, when you played defense, hey, you're going to be like Dick Butkus. You know, every blue collar white kid looked up to Dick Butkus. And then every blue collar African-American looked up to Mike Singletary, because he was the big middle linebacker for the Bears then, you know. So it's always middle linebacker for the Bears, whatever it is. That's always the blue collar hero, be it Butkus, Singletary, or Brian Urlacher, yeah, in the 2000s. So yeah, rest in peace to him. Getting into the actual wrestling, of course, big news: Adam Copeland, aka Edge, making his debut at AEW Wrestle Dream. How do you feel about how they debuted him and possibly the follow-up? We're kind of getting into Lazy River territory here, but that's because there's no
sure. So on the prediction episode, we basically more or less kind of predicted the outcome of this match. I thought that this was a really nice, pleasant surprise in the show. I did think that the Christian and Darby Allin match was going to over-deliver. This over-delivered past my expectations of over-delivery, so I really enjoyed the match. In terms of his debut, and we can break down the match more in length later on, but like, yeah. I want to at least set that up, because I thought that it made sense to have the match as the main event. I thought that the match breathe a lot more. And then we got to his debut at the end of the show. Made sense to do the debut at the end of the show, like the big final reveal or whatever. I didn't like him coming out and being a babyface, being adversarial with Christian. Even though, I mean, on Dynamite, they sort of clean it up and, you know, they're like, well, you know, you're attacking Sting. We love Sting. Why are you doing this? Blah, blah, blah. I would have had him be a heel. I would have had his, you know, let the crowd cheer for him and then have him join in with Christian. That was my only knock on that whole sequence. Otherwise, that match was pretty much picture perfect, note for note. I just thought it was unconfident to have him come out. Unconfident writing to have him come out and be a babyface in that scenario. I think it's a thing. Tony likes to have the crowd happy when they're going home. But I think longer term, like, it makes a lot more sense to have Edge as a heel than it does to have him as a babyface.
Interesting. I think the babyface thing was the right call, because you don't want the, oh, look, it's an invader from WWE and he's just going to trash AEW small time type of a thing. What was brought up to me, in listening and reading some of the critiques about it on Sunday night, early Monday, was I think they did something very subtle here, in that Christian was going to go for the concerto and then Copeland makes his debut. And I think the whole thing was, and this came in the cleanup as well, was that Christian Cage knew Adam Copeland was going to come out and was going to let him do the concerto the whole time. And then Copeland had second thoughts because Sting got involved with trying to make a save. So I think they went with subtlety, but they didn't say it, because it's one of those things where it's like, well, why are they not being defensive when Copeland comes out there? It's because Copeland was quote unquote in on it at the time and then had second thoughts. I loved the visual of him shaking hands with Sting. I thought that was kind of cool. The promo on Wednesday at the beginning of Dynamite, I didn't really care for, but we'll get into that in the Lazy River possibly. But yeah, that was the explanation for it, was that, hey, he was originally quote unquote a heel, but as he came out and hey, that's Sting, then realization came in and he decided, no, I am going to be a babyface here.
Mm.
Do you buy that? Doesn't look like it.
I think this is more of that writing your own story, like headcanon thing that like AEW fans have been fairly common are fond of doing here. Like they did it a lot during the Danielson feud with MJF, a lot of headcanon sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I don't, I think he debuted as a babyface because Tony wanted to send everyone home happy, and that's why the match was in the main event. This was the big reveal, and he wanted everyone happy and saying that that was a good show. And he just didn't want to have the crowd feel down leaving the building. Look,
they should have used our idea, and you would have never known it was Adam Copeland.
Oh, I'm sorry. Edgesaurus is one of those million-dollar ideas that they just leave on the cutting room floor for what I can only consider to be middling crap.
Well, that's because we've mellowed out and we're getting a downward trajectory on our salaries.
No, it's that. But if they had pounced on my Edgesaurus idea, if they had capitalized on that, who knows where this company would be now. As it were, I wish them the best of luck going into next week in this war on Tuesday.
Speaking of which.
If you had Edgesaurus, you'd be winning it, especially against JC Jane.
Yes, next Tuesday, NXT loaded for bear with a bunch of main roster people, including John Cena, Cody Rhodes, Paul Heyman, and Asuka. And, look who comes over to Tuesday is a loaded for bear AEW Dynamite.
Don't forget Dominic Mysterio is now champion again, too.
Somebody in WWE confirming to Fightful, but that, yes, they have been using main roster talent on NXT in an effort to boost ratings to get a higher rights deal. Color me shocked. Slap me with a cold fish. People like money. Wow.
Sky is blue. People like money.
My point that I made this week was this discourse on Wednesday or whenever the numbers come out is no win for everybody. So just close your computers, walk away, read a book.
Go to Tram Fest. Number one tram-based music festival in Albuquerque.
Kiss a girl, something, because...
Grass.
Because if NXT wins, it's going to be just because they cynically loaded up with a bunch of people from the main roster so that people would come over and watch. And if AEW wins,
it's because people love the style of work that happens on AEW.
It's just because it's no big deal because it's the developmental territory and it's NXT. Etc. etc. It's gonna be just pure stupid. We enjoy the stupid.
It's never the style of work on NXT if NXT wins, right?
Right. Yeah. Because they're the evil empire.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I'm not saying that I like the style of work on NXT either. It's just,
okay.
Yeah.
You were a big fan of who was it? Ilya Petrovich or whatever. that NXT.
That's a real
tournament looks terrible.
No, it's a real who's care of the women's division.
It's a who's that of the women's division? Yeah.
Who cares? There you go.
Who cares?
The real who cares?
They got a couple of. I mean, they got three women in there that are worth a darn. I think in there, really.
That's that when you're stacking out a tournament of eight people, you definitely want three of the eight to be competent.
Two are competent and one's personality. I like Santino's kid because she's just an awesome flake. Yeah. So that'll be next week. Oh, I can't wait to be on Twitter afterwards. Oh, that's going to be so much fun. But that's it for the news because it's a very slow news week. Ratings, look, SmackDown 2.3. They had their highest, I think, since July. They're doing pretty well. The big loser this week was Collision because they went head to head with No Mercy. It wasn't good. I think it was 300,000, a little bit over that, something to that effect. And everything else is, it's football season and Friday nights and other things, and baseball's now coming up. So there's going to be more rating stuff sucking the life out of wrestling. But we had a lot of good wrestling over this weekend. We enter our lazy river of wrestling criticism, whatever we watch, whatever we're thinking about, whatever we'd like to bring up, we can do that right here. We have two premium live events / pay-per-views to go over from this past weekend, and we have a preview of one for this weekend as the main roster breaks out WWE Fastlane on Saturday night. So, Chris, where would you like to start? No Mercy or Wrestle Dream for your ice cold takes?
Man, I've seen selections from both. So let's do No Mercy first. I watched Ilya Dragunov and Carmelo Hayes, and I thought that was great.
It was
so entertaining. Like, and as we said, Ilya Dragunov is just working at such a high level this year. I think, you know, when we talk like wrestler of the year or whatever at the end of the year, it's going to be very, very hard for me to kind of pick anyone other than Ilya Dragunov. I think he's just been having so many good matches all throughout the year, and this is yet another one that you can add into his catalog.
And for WWE style, it's so violent.
Yes, right? Like, he's doing it in WWE, which is that's kind of the crazy thing for me, is he is a highlight of work right now for me. It's a very stiff style. We've broken down his style length on previous episodes, so I feel like it'd be retreading a little bit, but this was yet another one of his offerings that just completely lived up to my expectations. He's great. He's really, really good.
And Mello was great in this match too.
Mello's also awesome. No, Mello is also great. I don't know that I love Identity Crisis Mello's character.
No.
Yeah, I find that I don't love it. But especially in all the intrigue of Identity Crisis Mello is gone now that Trick Williams doesn't have a title.
Yes.
So
they built that up on Sunday as if it's going to be a new feud.
The reason you do that is to have the buddy now have a title that's a lesser title, but you once had it, and you're trying to, like, so to dump it to Dominic is it's a silly foible in his character or whatever, but, like, he's such a good wrestler. And Ilya, for his part, I think I hope that he, like, basically just is a perfectly gray character going ahead. Like, he's just a dominant champion. I mean, he's kind of a heel when he needs to be a heel, and he operates as a babyface when he's up against more, like, you know, heelish opponents or whatever. Just a big, strong, dominant champion.
I watched the whole thing, so I'll give a few quick thoughts here. You know, just going down the card. Blair Davenport being Kalani Jordan was kind of expected. Kalani Jordan getting a few moves in, but Blair Davenport, you know, just then destroys her. Corbin and Braun Breaker was a fun Hoss match with just a stupid ending. That's what I don't even remember the ending. I'm looking at my Twitter.
Corbin
notes.
Wins, right?
Yes. That was just, and that's to put him in line for Ilya next.
Right, right. But he's a perfect, well, okay, I get it in the sense that, like, Ilya needs to stack some wins, and Baron Corbin's a perfect guy to do that against.
Trick and Dominic, as I said, it's a bad idea to then hot shot it back on Tuesday back to Dominic if you're going to do this. Was reported earlier by Fightful that before he was fired, that this was going to be Mustafa Ali being Dominic Mysterio for a quote unquote long title run. I don't know if that's true per se, but Trick Williams, number one, has improved drastically, and number two, has improved drastically in terms of his presence and his mic work too. He is becoming a total package in many, many ways.
Yeah, no. When he came out and he had his interaction with Mello and Ilya and all that was going down at the beginning of NXT before things went pear-shaped towards the end of the show, I thought that he absolutely fit in. Like, they felt like three main event players now. Like, he no longer feels like a sidekick. Like, Trick Williams is a legitimate guy with his own character. The Trick and Mello dynamic is actually really novel and interesting. And I like a lot of the characterization that's been going on with them. They're two friends, legitimately friends. They're both climbing the ladder together. They both wish each other well, but there are going to be times where they're in each other's way necessarily. And I think that that's a really interesting dynamic. And Trick Williams has really risen to the occasion to make that work.
Four-way tag match was a car crash, but a fun one. The Creed brothers are great. Garza and Carrillo are great. Out the Mud, they're green, but they held their own. But for me, the family, Tony D'Angelo and Stax Lorenzo, these guys are really good and they're getting better. And it's, it was a fun match. It wasn't anything to write home about necessarily, but, you know, you do all the spots you think they're going to do, you know, the cannonball from Julius Creed.
Brutus. Brutus is the cannonball.
Oh, Brutus. Yeah, right. Brutus. Big guy Brutus. That's what I got to think of that. I always get those two mixed up. But yeah, and, you know, D'Angelo did kind of the, injured at first and then comes back to bravely, you know, come back and help his partner type thing. But yeah, I mean, they're doing good work down in the junior circuit of WWE, and this tag team stuff was fun too. Also going to give some major flowers on this next match. Noam Dar beat Butch for the Heritage Cup, and Noam Dar does something that's so difficult right now in professional wrestling, in that he's a mid-card goofy comedy act that's an ass kicker during the match. And that is hard to do right now, because you want to keep up the, oh, he's just kind of a goof, he's kind of a geek, whatever. But he gets in that match and he beats the crap out of guys, and it's fantastic. And, you know, he could have some legs on the main roster doing this.
And too small. Vince will never do that.
I know. Well, Vince only has input, as we saw from Raw, as Johnny Gargano's back. But the only other match was the main event, of course, the Extreme Rules match between Becky Lynch and Tiffany Stratton. This was fun. I mean, Tiffany Stratton is a gamer. And I say this about very, very attractive women who don't need to be in wrestling, who are willing to dirty themselves in terms of showing how tough they are and stuff. She took a chain to the face and bled hard way. And we did not get pink weapons, but she also took the gimmicked barbed wire bat to the thigh a bit. Didn't bleed, but still. I mean, she was, she did a swanton from the top rope to a table on the outside. This match was great. And you know, Becky was there to lead her through the entire way. It went all over the arena. I kind of regret not going, that somebody had to record on Saturday. No, I wasn't probably going to go anyways. Stratton.
Hey, did you know I have a mustache now?
I think Stratton's going to be fine. She may get brought up sooner than later. I don't think she's necessarily ready, but it's going to get a little bit crowded down there. And NXT, especially now that we're doing a tournament of 8 more women in there to supplement. This is a time of year in silly season where they just decide to bring up some NXT people to pad the roster a bit and see what they got down there.
Well, no, but it also makes some sense too, in a world of Rhea Ripley, the incoming Jade Cargill, that Tiffany Stratton would be, and Charlotte, of course, larger women. Not like, you know what I mean? Like taller. Yeah. Taller. Yeah. Like Amazonian. And like Tiffany Stratton kind of fits. And Tiffany Stratton kind of fits into that universe a little bit better.
Gotcha. Lost you for a second there. And now on to Sunday's Wrestle Dream. And, My description of this after I finished Wrestle Dream, because I had somebody who's not in the wrestling bubble at all that I know from other life who's trying to get back into wrestling, who wrote me and says, hey, do you know anybody who knows Tony Khan? And I said, yeah, I do, kind of. Why? And I wasn't sure why they're asking. Hey, can you tell them to put pay-per-views back on Saturday or not to run them so long on Sundays? Because some of us need to sleep. And I don't disagree. This was the equivalent of a Brazilian steakhouse where they just keep feeding you meat and meat and meat.
You asked me if I watched it all, and I'm like, no, because I've learned my lesson with the AEW formatting, which is that, like, it's basically a Brian Cage match that's they just get the shit in. Like, and like, it's a lot of it, and some of it's very good, but a lot of times it's a lot of it. So you kind of, and I've found that I just have a sensory fatigue after about two and a half hours of wrestling. So it's like I have to get my 2 hours in.
I'm kind of with you a little bit, because it's very technically sound, good wrestling.
Sure.
But there's not a lot of emotion in terms of levels until you get to the main event. Or the last two matches, or like that match, and then the dead match. I'll go over this in a bit, but yeah. Highlights for me, Swerve and Adam Page, I thought was a fantastic match. I agree with you on the Christian Cage Darby Allin match as well.
That was outstanding. That one of my favorite matches in AEW. I thought the flow of that match, having Darby out wrestle Christian, so like he gets the moral victory in the first beat, and this is not headcanon stuff, right? Like this is actually the story that they are clearly telling, is that like Christian had to go to devious lengths after all this buildup of I'm the better wrestler than you, you know, like yeah, what you all you can do is this stuff, and it's Christian who has to turn to all the hardware and all the like tables, ladders, and chairs stuff. Darby Allin gets the victory on him initially by roll him up or something like that. It's like
he got that first one by sticking his turtleneck over his head and giving him a roll up. Yeah, that was a fun pin.
That was a fun pin, and then the second the count out was so masterful. It was such good characterization. Christian, on one hand, does this devastating move that should get time to breathe and sell, and then he goes inside and takes the absolute easy way out of taking the count out. He doesn't even try to go for the pinfall. He just goes for the made opportunity after using all the hardware. It was such a good second fall as well. And there was just so much time for that moment to really breathe and like be savored. And that's an uncommon thing in AEW. Usually a big move is immediately followed up with another big move, or we would just move the heck on. And in this case, folding on the back of the stairs. And that is something that you have as your image for a good 90 seconds, upwards of 2 minutes. I thought that was great too.
I wish they had hammered that point that you made, that Christian decided to resort to the hardcore stuff. And they mentioned it, but they hammer it.
No, commentary, I think, duffed it. But it's very clear that that's the story of the match.
Because you've actually made me rethink a point I had. Because I didn't like Christian tearing apart the ring. I'm tired of that trope. I was tired of it when Ciampa and Gargano were doing it in NXT.
But it's great because it's the complete opposite of everything he was to this.
You've talked me into it, is what I'm telling you. Yeah.
No, it's totally earned.
And yeah, if they had been more, Excalibur can do insulted and offended, but it always kind of comes off a little bit try-hardy. I think this would have been someplace for Tony or Kevin.
Someone should
have
been pointing out that he's a hypocrite.
Yes.
That after all of this, Christian's this big fat hypocrite. That he said that, I'm this great wrestler, but he's actually going back to his tables, ladders, and chairs stuff.
And continue to hammer it, because you have Nigel on the call who's doing, who's playing heel commentator.
Right.
For the most
part.
And he's doing a good job of it. Don't get me wrong. It's
not his fault. He needs to be effectively challenged by the babyface commentator, the babyface opinion side, and also like the play-by-play guy.
Yes, and that's what needed to get over here. Now, a few matches have kind of flown under the radar a bit from the general talking points. That's actually not true. But anyways, let me get to the stuff I liked, stuff I didn't like. I liked the Don Callis family versus Chris Jericho and the Golden Elite. That was a lot of fun with Takeshita Osprey and Guevara getting the win over Jericho and the Golden Elite. It was a fun six match. It was a bit of a, wild card going all over the place. And it did what it was supposed to do, which is continue to build this Don Callis family, which got followed up on Dynamite, I think, in a pretty spectacular way. We'll get to some Dynamite thoughts after
I wouldn't have had them lose, though. I wouldn't have had Takeshita and Fletcher lose.
Oh, they did. Oh, you mean on Dynamite? Yeah.
Yeah.
It opened the door for Callis to basically turn on Fletcher and then have Hobbs come out and clean up. So, I get that, but we'll talk about it. Let's table that for a second.
Sure.
I loved FTR and Aussie Open. Problem was, this crowd was too tired to enjoy it. they were worn out, and they're saving themselves for the main event. So this got the death spot. But it looks like Mark Dave is going to be out for a while because he broke his wrist in that match, which is a shame. Which is why Kyle Fletcher was put into that. Put into that Callis family match, although
I loved his hurricane cosplay, just fantastic outfit that he was wearing.
Stop, those are the colors.
Okay. Those are the colors.
Now here's where I mean, Bryan Danielson and Zack Sabre Jr. is being brought up as a match of the year candidate by a lot of people. And I'm not gonna piss in your Cheerios about it. If you loved this match, great. I thought it was very good. And it was a technical wrestling masterpiece. I get that. And I will color my remarks here by saying I've watched a lot of Zack Sabre Jr. up close in PWG. So that I might just be fatigued by it. I think my criticism of this match, and it's not really a criticism, it's a quibble, is that it felt like two guys trying to put on a very good technical wrestling match instead of who is the best technical wrestler and trying to win the match. You know, the ending came when Danielson had to resort to a couple of knees, and they cleaned that up on Dynamite. I didn't exactly buy it, but for me, the match felt like guys who were having fun and having their goal was to have a good technical wrestling match and not tell the story of who the best technical wrestler was, if that makes sense.
Right. I'm with that. And then like the follow-up on Zack Sabre wing. Oh, you used a knee and you knocked me out. What a coward's move. On one hand, that's fun heel characterization that, like, getting, like, the tap out is better than just getting lights out. There's no logic. So, like, on one hand, on another hand, I guess I'm like, why would Daniel to buy that as a valid argument? Like, right. It's one thing for the heel to disingenuously, like for example, to a Renee Young. It's another thing for the babyface to whom the ridiculous argument is being made to actually internalize that and go, oh yeah, well, I guess I do have something still to prove and I'm going to prove it to you. Like, no, you actually don't.
You there?
I am there. I finished my point. Yeah,
you finished your point, but you were spiking a bit. I'm sorry. The one match I didn't care for, MJF versus the Righteous, defeating him by pinfall.
Boy, it made the entire build for the Righteous seem very stupid and pointless and frivolous. Like it felt like they had all this expositional reveal about Adam Cole and MJF that was going to be a plot beat going ahead, and then MJF just wins.
Well, the promo before the match where, you know, I'm going to take Fat Boy, I'm going to take White Boy Dreads and stick his head up his ass. This is the comedy other side of the coin to a trope in WWE during the Attitude Era and even beyond, where Triple H as champion would beat, you know, a tag team 1-on-2 to show how powerful he was. I'm sorry, my old school brain still thinks tag team wrestlers and a tag team will always be better than two singles guys together, and two guys who work as a team will always be able to beat one guy. I understand people enjoy it, but wasn't
no, I hated that. I'm with you as well. I think in terms of power differential, it may for a singles wrestler to be able to beat a real team, or if he does, it should require incredible outsmarting. Like, let's take it back to the 1980s, and we have a match where the Midnight Express is going up against, let's say, Dusty Rhodes.
Yes.
Dusty needs to somehow outsmart Stan Lane to get Bobby Eaton isolated to be able to overwhelm Bobby Eaton. So like something has to happen where like Stan Lane gets distracted, runs to the back, and he's not actually there for the finish. Like that's the way you actually prevail. The singles guy prevails against the tag team is not by overcoming their double tandem moves. It's by isolating one of them.
Yes.
And taking advantage of that person in isolation. Same thing with a heel. It's actually even easier with a heel. You have a dominant heel and he's going up against the Hardy Boys. Let's say like you take it back to 2000, you isolate Matt Hardy and you break his knee or something like that, and he's outside and he's suing, oh my knee. And now Jeff's still in there trying to fight, let's say, Kane, right? And now at this point, Kane gets the tombstone piledriver. But like, Kane shouldn't actually, I mean, I think they did do this back in the day, but like, Kane shouldn't be able to beat the Hardy boys. Not when they're, you know, after the TLC like level or whatever. Like, he would need to isolate one of them to beat the other one.
Yeah, I suspect we'll be talking a little bit about MJF as soon as we get through. We can blow through this fast lane preview because there's only five matches here.
Let's do it. Let's go on the fast lane to fast lane. Fast lane squared.
Six-man tag, Latino World Order of Rey Mysterio, Santos Escobar, and either Joaquin Wilde or Cruz del Toro versus Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits. The newly minted heel team of the Street Profits, Angelo Dawkins and Montez Ford.
Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits are going to win. I think the real question here is, does the LWO turn on Rey Mysterio? And I now think the answer is no.
I hope not.
I think it's just going to stay in orbit in this area, yeah.
Because that would also not make sense after the Street Profits beat the crap out of Escobar and Mysterio for Escobar to just turn around and go, I don't like you anymore, et cetera. But if they're bringing up Dragon Lee, of course, you know, you never know. But it feels squashy to me in terms of whichever one of Wild or Del Toro is going to be sacrificed while Rey and Santos get some offense in.
Well, yeah, you think that one of the competitors is not named and that's the one who's going to get pinned?
No. For the undisputed WWE Tag Team Championships, your champions, the Judgment Day of Finn Balor and Damian Priest taking on Cody Rhodes and Jey Uso. This will be based on whatever happens on SmackDown, which we will not be able to watch before recording. So
this is a tough one. I think this is a jump ball to me because I think there's interesting things you could do narratively in either direction. I'm gonna say Jey Uso wins the titles with Cody.
I am going to go that this is going to be highly convoluted. And that they have decided to avoid, well, maybe not, because I'm looking at that main event and I'm thinking to myself, but I could see something where they decide Finn and Priest lose the titles and then Finn cashes in Damian Priest's briefcase to then win the titles back as a tag team. Because you can do that with this Money in the Bank briefcase.
You can do that. Oh, I kind of like that. That's actually fun though.
And then that increases the tension again between Balor and Priest because Balor.
They win the title and they win the titles back, but like Priest is pissed off because he's not going to get to go for a real singles title now.
Yes,
I like that.
Okay,
I'm. I know that's kind of like camp. That's actually a fun deployment of the briefcase. It's new
because I don't think he's ever going to cash in against Roman. And I think Rollins is the target here, but I'm just not sure what they're thinking with him now. So for the WWE Women's Championship, a triple threat between Io Sky, Asuka, and Charlotte Flair. It will be set up by a tag team match tomorrow night. Charlotte Flair and Asuka taking on Io and Bayley. I have my thoughts here. Io has been doing nothing as champ. They never broke up Damage Control. And I think what's going to happen here is they're going to break up Damage Control and Io's still going to lose the title.
Yeah.
This feels like Charlotte Flair is getting a title run. I know it's crazy.
I don't think it's crazy at all. Like, I have a hard time betting against Charlotte Flair in pretty much any scenario they put her in because she's not at Cena levels of like overwhelming, but like Charlotte Flair, when they want to push her, she becomes Cena levels of overwhelming for like flashes of time. And it feels like we're coming back into Charlotte season.
Yeah. And remember, you know,
I don't like it, but like, doesn't she make sense for Jade Cargill?
We're in that season where we're starting to set up things. We're gonna get the titles off the people who you know we put on SummerSlam or maybe even Survivor Series, or we're gonna use Survivor Series for this, and we're gonna start building whoever the champs are for Royal Rumble season, where we start setting up your Mania matches. And this feels like, all right, Io's had her run.
Yep.
She's not been much of a champion because of this damage control thing, even though damage control is a lot of fun. Let's give the belt to Charlotte so that she can, you know, she can, you know, so yeah. And I think you might be correct, although
so it makes a lot of sense for her. I mean, she's on Raw right now. Yeah. I mean, when they want to move her, they'll move her. It makes too much sense to read Io Shirai as a transitional champion in WWE versus a person that they truly trust to run stories through going into WrestleMania season.
John Cena and LA Knight taking on the Bloodline of Jimmy Uso and Solo Sikoa with Paul Heyman. This one seems obvious to me. John Cena gets a lot of the offense, gets a lot of the cheers. LA Knight gets the pin on one of those two.
Yeah, and so then it also makes me think even more that Jay wins. Jay and Cody win the titles. So that Jimmy loses, Jay wins. Yeah, you got that dichotomy thing going there. Because Jimmy and Solo are definitely losing here. Are they? Okay. Yes. I mean, like, because you can't pin LA Knight right now, right? Like, you can't have Solo Sikoa spike.
No, because I think we're getting LA Knight and Roman for right. Survivor
yeah,
Series.
Yeah. I'm with you. And they're not gonna have Solo. I mean, having Solo pin John Cena would be a big deal. But I don't think they're. No, they're losing. Yeah, I'm with you.
Okay. And then in your final match, maybe. I don't know if this is going to be the main event. This is just the one listed as number one, but it's for the World Heavyweight Championship or the World Consolation Championship.
Yeah, yeah, the Consolation Prize.
Last man standing match between Seth friggin' Rollins and Shinsuke Nakamura with the most ridiculous segment I think I've ever seen in professional wrestling of a pre-tape that knows the count at the same time. I could see Rollins pulling this out and Priest cashing in with the bad backstory. I get it. I like my story better.
I think it's way more interesting. I mean, you could still have Jay and Cody win. Finn cashes in the Money in the Bank briefcase and the rematch too.
Yeah,
but it does feel like this last man standing match seems like a perfect candidate for Damian Priest to get in there, and
this screams briefcase cash in.
Yeah, it does.
Because look, Rollins and Nakamura, while I love both guys, is a B feud. Nakamura's been ice cold until this feud.
I'm glad that he's got his music back.
It's going to be a nice match. I mean, look, if this is going to be a walking brawl with Nakamura, sure, I'm here for this, man.
I think they'll have good, like, characterization. Like, a walking brawl with Nakamura and Rollins actually, like, provides a lot of opportunity for good character work from Nakamura. Because, like, Nakamura ain't doing, he ain't the guy in my t-shirt from 2013. But he's still like fun as a character at this point. I guess there's some room for that. Man, I really see this as the Damian Priest cash in. So maybe they lose the titles, and then Priest gets a singles title, and then it turns into Where's Your Title, Finn? Because that seems to be the big thing. I think that's going to be the Judgment Day storyline, is one of them at any given time isn't going to have a title going ahead. That they're going to have a lot of the belts, but someone's always going to be missing a belt going forward here.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Okay, Raw, NXT, Dynamite. The Lazy River is now open, Chris. Where do you want to go?
Boy, I mean, we have hit a lot of these points. All right, let's talk MJF, man. Like, How do we feel about where MJF is as a character right now?
He stinks.
I agree.
I don't care about what they're doing. Go ahead.
But is he bad, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Devil thing is really annoying. I like him, especially because when Jay White jumped him, then it was like whatever happened during the jumping was apparently fairly insubstantial last week, which makes like what even if MJF was in a devil's mask, all he did was beat someone up backstage who's a dick and like who is clearly going to jump him. He got the jump on a bad guy. I mean, I think in order for the is MJF really evil when he puts on the devil mask sort of thing to work, Jay White needed to come out and be like a credible challenger for MJF's belt. And MJF injures him. That story's over. The way he avoids that title match, if you think he's the devil, the way he avoided the title match is that he took out Jay White's knee and he's out for 6 to 8 weeks now. End of feud. I think it misunderstands how to deploy the devil masked aspect of MJF to just have Jay White be able to come back the next week and ambush him. A devil, or even if there's going to be intrigue, is he really the man in the mask? That's only intriguing to me if it seems like, in a way that's almost uncomfortable, the babyface has the clear upper hand on these four guys.
I am taking a different tact into why I don't like this character. And I brought it up last week. It's very, but and I like MJF too. I had hopes for him. I was saying put the belt on him. So let me get those biases out there before anybody buries me for this, because it's one of those. I thought you liked MJF. I do like MJF.
Oh, and he's really working with the audience. I mean, like he's our scumbag. Like they love him. Yeah, he's
it's great. It's the weekly catchphrase a la Jericho. It's the we've gone now into the tofu chant and the dueling ass boys. Something taint, and he defenestrated the entire main heel group on Collision. That is my problem here, is that those guys are now all goofs, including Jay White.
And I think for me it's the execution.
It is.
Yeah, no. If Devil MJF shows us like the question mark of Devil MJF shows us that he can absolutely decimate the main heel faction on another group, or like by playing by heel rules or whatever, that's intriguing. When he just comes out and cracks jokes and calls Jay White tofu, that is not intriguing.
Well, what he's saying is your gimmicks suck.
Well, yeah,
it's not you're bad wrestlers or you're not tough guys. Yeah, it's that, and that's where
I'm with you. It's the literally last week he was like, you were a marketer's dream. It's so weird. It's like a character saying to another character, you know what? You're just some like weird writer's nerdy fantasy. Like that's a very strange move for a character in a TV show to make.
Although I will give props now, because we have 6 weeks to build this feud, because they announced that this was going to be the match at Full Gear. I liked White coming out and just knocking him out. That was great. But other than that, it was
it's so interesting, like what bothers you and what bothers me. It's totally different. I actually hate it. Like it completely undermines the entire murder mystery aspect to Devil Mask. And when Jay White comes out and annihilates MJF.
Oh, I don't think MJF is under that mask.
I know, but it's supposed to be a murder mystery.
Yes, okay.
Like he's sure he's the red herring. I
okay, no. Now I'm feeling you on the narrative. Okay, I got you.
Yeah. Like, yeah, you kill him as a suspect.
Are we getting Britt as a femme fatale? That'd be kind of cool. It'd be better than Toni Storm doing Laurel Van Ness.
I'm not gonna lie. What movie was she actually doing there?
Sunset Boulevard.
I was like,
I kind of like that. I like the Toni Storm character, and I like the character.
I also like that you're still young, like, because she's like what, 32?
The issues I had were RJ City being in the vignettes, because he's wacky.
27.
And now the crane zoom for her thing, you know, kind of like the opposite of the give the people what they want when she does the frame thing and it comes into her. I'm just oh no, we're gonna go full. They are going full on wacky character on AEW because, before we leave MJF, that Max Caster vignette, which was only for people who follow their interactions on Twitter. That's what that was. And nobody got that unless you have been heavy, heavy into watching how they interact with each other on Twitter.
I also thought it was really funny that they re-aired the Roddy Strong and Adam Cole.
No, I have an entire rant about this because...
That made me howl. Like, I mean, okay, you duffed the sound. You should just apologize for the sound sucking and moving on. Rather than re-air it.
Hold on. Chris... When you watched this, either the first or the second time,
it didn't get better.
Did any of the dialogue seem especially witty to you? Were there any character lines?
I thought the audio F up was doing it some favors. This sucks.
But the move itself sucks because it's like Tony announces on Twitter, "Oh, we're going to do an overrun because we don't want you, the fans, to miss the sketch comedy genius here that was Adam Cole and Roderick Strong and the Kingdom and Matt Taven stroking a giraffe and them racing around on a scooter. This was all visual stuff anyways. Who gives a crap about the dialogue? Because everything in there was based on shots in there, and they set it up that way, including the when Adam Cole is moving furniture and he looks in the mirror and he sees the Kingdom laughing at him. It's hold on, my comedic genius was not fully appreciated. I need that to run again, Turner Networks.
You just play people, let me tell you about my best friend.
I was saying the same thing. Yes, courtship of his father. Yes.
Yeah, you just play that over the scene.
Yes.
Oh, you get to the part where, like, I mean, literally, Roddy comes in, Adam, whatever his crappy character is doing now. And then, like, at the end of the people, let me tell you about the best friend, montage 70s style, we get another Adam, and, like, he's like, my neck, and, like, that's the end of it. I just saved you 30 seconds.
You literally read my mind on the courtship of Eddie's father, and I failed to bring it up on my show last night because I was like, oh, that's too old of a reference. Me, the old guy. But yes, I mean, that's all it is. It's a montage of friendship.
It's like a 70s, 80s style musical montage. Just plug a song in. That probably you get that song.
Clever dialogue. Well, who cares about the sound? We got the point. Let's move on. You know, that kind of thing. But I've given something. You go ahead.
We also got in Timeless Tony Storm in there too. So let me see what else is on here.
If you want time to think, I got two things.
I'm just looking through the Dynamite card again. I don't know. Like, they keep murdering Tony or the Sky Blue. It's kind of like, what is the point of her?
Let me ask you something because I brought this up last night and I wasn't sure about this either. Sky Blue had a bit of a, it was subtle, but it felt like a little bit of a presentation difference after the Black Mist, where it seemed like she was a little bit more dour and she wasn't made up as well and she wasn't smiling and happy. And I wasn't sure if it was a bad night or a character choice.
I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, like, she's on a losing streak. Maybe she becomes an acolyte of Julia Hart. Okay.
I clown on AEW a lot. So let me give you two things I loved.
Okay.
I loved the Samoa Joe promo.
Oh, that was a lot of fun.
This was pro wrestling for me. Big, burly, badass, showing you how much money he makes, holding the cigar and the adult beverage. And just telling you, when I want the title, I'm coming for it. I'm like, yes, that's just classic stuff. And that's all I want.
a decent attempt at cleaning up a very silly finish to that match. I actually think his tone, like, I liked a lot of it. I think his tone when he turns to sort of start addressing MJF needed to change.
Okay.
I thought, like, the first two thirds of that, totally awesome. Like, I've beaten a bunch of people. I kill people when I want to. I eat when I want to. I have a drink. I have a smoke. I'm a champion. I loved all of that. It's hard to explain why he shook MJF's hand, but
yes, that was a
very strange beat in that match. Like, if anything, when MJF sticks out his hand, Joe should have slapped that shit away. And like that, if he had done that, I actually would have preferred him to say, "I shook your hand." Because of something involving Ring of Honor, basically, like, bring up, like, there was like a night of ROH or whatever. That's
not that you earned my respect, but
you didn't earn my respect. It was like out of respect for Ring of Honor and the tradition that I built at that place. So to not shake your hand would have been disrespecting myself, but that's the only reason I shook your, like, I know what you are. Because I think the intrigue with MJF as champion here is like, is he a babyface? Is he really your scumbag, or is he just a scumbag?
Yeah.
And like, that should be the open question with this. And you should have people like Joe and the Righteous sort of openly casting doubt on this.
The Righteous did on that promo that they did, the video thing. Right. Where it's like, you're a liar. Yeah.
You've got good puzzle pieces to play with here to make MJF a very interesting character.
Yes.
And like, I mean, part of the reason I'm critical of is I can really see a way with some small tweaks where you can make him a very compelling, unique, babyface question mark sort of champion, and like have it always be this thing, this open question that heels are saying, and then maybe they're right someday, or maybe they're not. But like, you just keep it open enough at all times.
You know what they need is just MJF to come out. No promo burying the opponent. Come out and win a clean babyface match, and just no shenanigans, nothing, and everybody just kind of be like, "What was that?" kind of a thing, just to keep people off guard a little bit.
You should be a sus babyface.
Yes.
Yeah, like that. That actually, I mean, that sort of would be a very interesting, twisty sort of thing. Instead, you've got. You have sort of the seeds of that out there, right? But like, again, not being executed, and the Joe promo missed the mark on that for me. And then you still have all this goofus stuff with Adam Cole and Neck Boy, Roddy Strong, and the nerds. And like, I hate it.
Yeah, I really, that one, I was just like, okay. The thing that made the MJF Adam Cole vignettes funny was that MJF was such an absurd character to the point where even Adam Cole would have to cut him off and go, wait, what are you doing? Type of a thing. With Roderick Strong, he's an absurd character, but he's not absurd enough to throw Adam Cole back into being the straight man. And that's the problem I have with the two dynamics right there.
Yeah, Adam Cole comes off as the putz, not the straight man.
Yeah. I loved the Christian Adam Copeland segment to end the night. I thought it actually saved what I thought wasn't a very terribly strong Dynamite.
I agree. I didn't think it was a strong Dynamite. I don't know if it saved it, but it definitely agree.
Well, it's always that, you know, that last memory you go, wasn't that bad of a show.
I agree.
On Copeland's part, he seemed very relaxed. The self-deprecation shock, because I just referred to myself in the third person. Who does that? Not sure if that was scripted or not, but it was a fun moment. The only moment that felt unearned for me from him was him telling Christian Cage that Nick Wayne and Luchasaurus would turn on him the moment that they had taken all the knowledge from him. Nick Wayne just turned, guys. There's no... They're all... And Luchasaurus has proved himself
an idiot.
Has proved himself loyal to Christian, despite the fact that Christian has abused him and for months and months and months.
Stupid. Yeah, no, like Lucha. I mean, you could say he's loyal, abused, not smart enough to break the abuse cycle. Like clearly incapable of seeing through it when other people have even tried to tell him. So it's like. And one other thing, it does not appear that Luchasaurus is getting smarter, which is the whole predicate of Adam Copeland.
He's not evolving at all.
Yeah, no, he's killed by an asteroid. You got a lizard brain, man. This guy's a nerd.
Yeah, no. When that line came out, I go, that is just the most ridiculous. No, that almost took me off. That almost took me out of it.
It was a bad argument. That's not what's been happening with this dynamic.
Christian is in full control of this stable. What are you talking about? Do you even watch the product?
The better way of thinking about what's the Christian dynamic, right? Luchasaurus is his pet, his attack dog, and Nick Wayne is his fake son.
And
that's what's going on here. Like, they're not both, like, predate on him and boy.
We're going to trick the old man eventually and take his title.
Make the evil Jurassic Express. No, that's, like, not where this is going.
There was something in my head that I was going to say, and I can't think of it now, but it was funny.
I would have much preferred, Edge and Christian together as like Nick Wayne's evil two dads. But, it's my two dads, only they're evil.
But the it was one of those things. It's like they're gonna turn on you eventually, type of a thing. It's like that is such a forced thing and stuff. But you know, other than that, I mean, he was relaxed. He wasn't in that WWE style type of thing. I mean, look, it was very people were criticizing it because it's so bloodline type story, it's lore, it's this, it's like, well, that's what angles are, guys. I hate to tell you all that.
This is bad foreshadowing, and like, let me make the explanation why.
Okay,
now Christian either has to win every title match he's in against every other babyface prior to Nick Wayne, therefore removing any of the intrigue in any of his upcoming matches. Or that foreshadowing has to mean nothing and Adam Copeland's just entirely wrong. Like, his first promo was a giant swing and miss.
See, the only way I can see this work now is if Jack Perry comes back and takes over for Nick Wayne and Luchasaurus.
Jack Perry really should join up with Christian too, because he doesn't have a dad either.
Well, yes, we've made that clear on the promo.
No. Yeah, you know, his dad was Luke Perry.
On
90210.
That said, Christian Cage was fantastic in this segment because he was telling stories with his eyes during that entire Adam Copeland promo where he's pretending to buy in to the nostalgia, and you can see it on his face, and it's like, and he's not saying anything, but it's so good. And then he just gets straight, you know, deadpan before giving the hug to Copeland.
And then his face changes in the hug, too.
Face changes in the hug, and then the line, go F yourself, was so strong in terms of not just a no. I mean, there's two ways you can do this. No or F no. And F no feels really, especially after all the work that he put in there with the emotion work on his face, doing some clever film work for a wrestler. I know people harp on me when I get into the acting stuff, but just watching it.
We're always really, in terms of wrestlers, they're pretty darn good actors.
Yes. I mean, they're great comedians, but they're also great, you know, heels, both of them. I mean, Edge's rated R thing was great. I forgot to ask you this when we started. Is this a new era for AEW? Is this something that will move the needle? Because I am under the opinion it's more like I'm happy for Copeland, and I don't think the pressure of him putting a company on another level should be on him, even though he will take it. But this feels like the big box office draw who wants to do some indie films as he's kind of aged out of being an action star type of thing, more than I'm here to beat WWE type of thing. This is him playing with FTR and Uncle Jay and a few new guys, and he's going to be able to have some good matches here. And he wants to go to Japan and face Okada. 50-year-old Adam Copeland, I'm not sure about. 30-year-old Adam Copeland, I would have loved that. But yeah, is this a new era? Because we're concentrating on character work. We're concentrating on one Mr. Copeland. What do you think the numbers are going to bear out in the future here?
I don't think he's a needle mover. I hate to burst people's bubbles. In terms of potentially entertaining television, Edge and Christian in many different configurations could very much be a strong narrative anchor that this show needs. In a way that, in my opinion, I get that people like the Don Callis family matches, but I don't find any of the skits or the segments to be doing anything for me. Matt and Nick Jackson don't do character work like that. And this show does need someone to be sort of like the character anchor for this show. Edge and Christian potentially offer that energy. They're strong promos. They're engaging. And the MJF also doing that, but all, like in a much more, you know, shaky way, as we've discussed in the past. But I don't think it's like a new era or anything like that. I just think that this is an elevation of Christian's status on the roster, and Edge being alongside Christian will ensure that Christian's more of a centerpiece on the show. And for my taste, I welcome that because I enjoy Christian matches. I hate that Edge introduced either a false prophecy or an incredible plot armor onto Christian matches going forward here. Like, that was a bad mistake.
NXT, the only point I had was Trick. So I can throw a couple more AEW points at you if you don't have anything.
No, I don't have any other points.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wardlow. What was that?
He hasn't been
on TV.
We're really doing this again with him? No, I watched that, but like, geez, we're doing this again.
I got mad at that because like you have 12 people backstage to do interviews and nobody tried to get a word in as where he's been, what he's doing. It's just and then a commentary was just kind of like, yay, squash the guy to the back. And you're just like, we haven't seen Wardlow in 5 months. Where's he been? What's his motives? Why hasn't he been here? Give me something. Because for me, the move would be to bring Wardlow in as the secret partner of one Konosuke Takeshita.
Yeah,
and
right.
Put him in the Callis family there. Not that I don't like Hobbs here, because I thought the Hobbs rebirth was great, especially after all the QTV nonsense. But, you know, it was one of those things where it's like, we've been looking for creative for Wardlow for months now, and he comes in. 5-star beating of Griff Garrison. Poor Griff. His partner's now over on NXT getting star vignettes, and he was the talent of that Varsity Blondes team. Who, out of the three of them, Julia Hart, Pillman Jr., and Griff Garrison, Griff Garrison's the one who loses here?
Yeah, he was
what?
One of them.
What? All right. But yeah, I want something with Wardlow. I want more meat with Wardlow. Give him something to do here.
You can't Goldberg him a third time. Like,
he needs a motive. He needs a manager. He needs something. I get that this might be
a refried Goldberger is what he is. Reheated Goldberger.
And then the Al Cervix special to open the card here. Was it? I always get the Jacksons mixed up, but
Nick Jackson versus I think it was
Ray Phoenix.
Yeah, Phoenix. Yeah,
where ow my arm, ow my back comes up about you know every 5 minutes or so, and then they're just going full speed. I liked the spot. I liked the spot where Nick kicked the post, and then Phoenix sweeps the leg, and he ends up in a handstand for a second there. Before, you know, as he bumps his head. But overall, this is cotton candy match. And this is why I can't get into a lot of indie style AEW, because we're doing super cutters and Canadian destroyers. And the guy supposedly has a bad back that he's selling every 20 seconds.
The type of match that they do on this show that I do not like.
Why is Ray Phoenix the indestructible man. That's what, you know, and that gets...
Why are all of the biggest moves being done in the opener match?
That too?
I'm like, I know I
said, Mr. Cornette, please, you have the floor.
No, I know I sound like an old man, but it's like, okay, you like basically are firing all the guns on the big match. Like there's very little that someone can do later on in the show that hasn't already been done in the beginning of the show.
Yeah, it's like ECW in the late 90s, if they had started with, hey, you're going to go through 10 tables here, and then we're going to have a match with, I don't know, some
Paul. You know what the genius of a Rob Van Dam
JT
match
was? Smith and Super Crazy after that. Or
I have
that.
Really come around. Okay, Rob Van Dam. I really revised up my assessment of Rob Van Dam in terms of like the quintessential like upper mid card act in those ECW cards. Here's what's great about him, right? Always got the crowd pumped when he did his match, but like in a way that at least for a good long time didn't overshadow the main event unless the main event was really weakly produced. And here's why. Because Rob Van Dam basically does the same spots in every single Rob Van Dam match. So it's not like, you know, okay, I'm not going to do the Van Terminator or anything like that because that's what RVD does. And so, like, while he does do several big moves during that match, and they're always spectacular, especially by the standards of that day, he also, you know, would leave room for, like, Taz or Shane Douglas or whoever the champion was at the time. To have a very different style of match, and they could do all sorts of other moves because you predictably and reliably knew what a Rob Van Dam match was going to be, and it didn't necessarily try to do every single move that's in the wrestling handbook. Whereas, like, the Matt Jackson, Nick Jackson, Ray Phoenix is also definitely guilty of this too, along with Commander and any number of these other guys. They do these crazy super finisher moves, get a two count, and, like, you know, very much... AEW fans like to point out that WWE very much likes to crutch on near falls as a trope. And like, that's what these style of matches do too. And that's why they stink, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like these near fall centric matches, particularly when the near falls are like, you know, getting shot with a shotgun for a two count.
I hate that. And I hate it. I mean, just to go back to it, I hated the ending of that Trick Williams Dominic Mysterio match.
Oh, that was ridiculous too. Right?
Melo needs
to show up at some point during that.
I mean, we have, you know, 12 different distractions to eventually get the guy, and nobody ever figures it out as a babyface that, hey, I need someone out there to stop this, or you need competent referee. And they also, the problem is they do this every week. Every single week. And it's not the same as, say, you know, the Horsemen just run in to beat a guy down and take the loss because it's a Rube Goldberg device of interference every single week. And in multiple matches, not just Judgment Day aren't the only ones to do this, but it's one of those things where you need less is more on this. And it makes it special when you do it in highly emotional moments, as opposed to, you know, as a transition plot device on your on a weekly television show. That's the difference to me.
No, Melo needed to come out and try to make the save at some point.
Yeah,
like initially, you know, like, okay, the crisis of conscience thing, dumb too anyways, especially like abandon ship on that. Like, this is actually the perfect opportunity, especially if you're gonna take the title off a Trick. Here's a good opportunity for Melo to come down and make the save.
I will defend this because there's a logical point to this where he couldn't come out because he had left the arena. He was in the parking lot, remember, going to his car and saying, hey, I got a call from John Cena. He'll be there to be my second next week.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
I hate to throw cold water on your rant here, but,
maybe Trick has more than
one friend here. How about that? You know, maybe someone can see injustice and want to
take
it upon
himself. Well, how about a better way of putting this? Maybe the Judgment Day has more than one enemy.
Yes, that too.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Dude, the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yeah, no, Trick, like, arguably Trick doesn't because he's been so all in on Melo. So, like that, I think that's maybe that. I'll pour cold water on that, Hawkins. But the Judgment Day. Judgment Day
I didn't do it with animus, Chris. So I was just saying.
You know what? I'm trying to be more successful. And in order to be successful, you need to be angry. That's one thing I've learned in this life. That
what did I do?
No, you take your frustration, your shame, your guilt, you turn it into anger, and you let that fuel you to success.
Yeah, I am definitely looking forward to Oscar Roxanne Perez. That segment sucked. That thing setting up the three way with
Becky, my god,
that was the worst thing this week. I hate to. For all the people going, oh, you're too hard on Dynamite. That was hot garbage. This was three baby faces who can't talk, who are all supposed to give a little bit of tood and makes them less likable. There is no reason for Roxanne Perez, lovely as she is, sweetest, happiest, straight ahead baby face, has a lisp, which is a bit of a problem. And then coming out with the leather jacket and trying to talk tough here. No. Just have her be straight ahead. Same with Lyra Valkyria. And same with Indy Hartwell. All these people are people we've been building up for the NXT universe to actually like and get behind and be great stories straight ahead. Hey, these are people. This is friendship. This is great. And all of them come out here and are jerks. And you're just like, and Becky's proclivities don't help either when she's doing the Conor McGregor thing. But I'm just like, I'm watching this. I'm going, I hate all three of you. I want Tiffany Stratton to kill all of you. If that's Kiana James, who's always a welcome sight for me. But just because she's a gamer, I like her. It was kind of weird for her to interfere in a match and then say, oh yeah, and then Perez is going to be facing Asuka. Did she hire Asuka? How does that happen? Why is Asuka aligning herself with Kiana James, of all people? I don't get that. But back to it. Yes, don't make Roxanne Perez unlikable in any way, please. Please and thank you.
I was baffled by the pairing of Thea Hale and JC Jane against Lola Vice and Electra Lopez. Like, this is just not the tag team you do this with right now. And to wit, they at least realize that, like, you can't beat Lola Vice right now. That would be the dumbest thing. So they have Electra Lopez tap out, which is also stupid in its own right. They've kind of cooled off on her a little bit. I mean, the segment itself was entertaining. I was just like, really? You wouldn't just have them do this against two enhancement, like, squishy baby?
Yeah, and the other problem there.
It's Sky Blues and throw them in there.
Yeah, the best part of this feud was on Twitter again, because they showed the tweets on screen, and JC Jane's comeback of, hey, settle down, Jenny from the corner, and Electra Lopez was a fantastic line. And I love this duo, and I love that they're, it's weird because it's working, because JC's kind of giving in to Chase U at the same time that they're both being rebellious against these two dorks, especially. There is no use for Duke Hudson in NXT. No, I'm sorry.
Sucks. He sucks. We've tried.
Chase is great as the disapproving father.
He sucks. Like, he sucks as a character. He doesn't do anything in the ring at all. Like, he is a guy who is so
a harsh term, and I don't want to use that on a guy because, you know, we don't, you know, it's not his fault.
No, the character work sucks. How many times have we watched a Duke Hudson match and all of the various iterations of him, and name me one good one?
No, you're correct. He does have some charm as a Chase U student, but that's about it.
He's not even as good as Bodie Hayward.
No, you're correct on that. There's no value over replacement.
No, there's no value over replacement there. I'm sorry.
We've hit his joke so hard that he's now boring.
Yeah. He was one joke. The joke wasn't that good. He wasn't that good at it. I'm sorry. No, he stinks. Duke Hudson stinks.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
You want to end there?
Yeah, that's
okay,
it.
Well,
if you want to be successful in radio, you know what you need to be? A little bit angry.
A little bit angry, because otherwise, you know, as you get nicer, your earning trajectory goes down.
Be nice.
You can follow me on the increasingly frustrating x.com at crapgame13.
You're telling me they haven't made a banger website out of that over the last year, Jeff?
Oh, Chris, they've now decided that when you quote tweet or whatever they're calling it now, an article, They will no longer print the headline in it. It's just the photo with it and a link. It's cool. Terrible. I'm on Blue Sky, but I don't post there. It's Jeff Hawkins, whatever the hell that thing is. You can follow me or you can follow the show at Shake Them Ropes, all one word. I also do a show on the Fight Game Media Network called The Dynamite Show about 20 minutes after we go live on YouTube. But for $5, you can also get the audio the next day in your podcast droppers of all time. It's usually myself and Paul Fontaine, but this time it was myself and the wonderful Kevin Ely, if you've never heard him from Fight Game Media's The Boom. We thoroughly deconstructed all the shenanigans on this Wednesday's Dynamite. And go over there, patreon.com/fightgamemedia. Chris has plugs. He has Tramp Fest. He has a mustache. He has guitar lessons. He has mustache lessons.
More and more you are hearing about Tramp Fest. America's number
Everybody's talking about Tramp Fest, Chris.
It's like I can't go anywhere and not hear about it. Yeah, I turn
Taylor
left.
Taylor Swift is plugging.
I turn left. Tramp Fest. I turn right. Tramp Fest. The people are just, they can't stop talking about it. It's in the hearts and minds of literally millions of Americans right now. And it will be, it is.
Oversell it.
No, I oversell. If anything, I'm underselling. We could be talking upwards of billions around the world here, touched by Tram Fest, by the end of Tram Fest. So there's only one way to do it. You got to get out to Sandia Peak Aero Tramway out here in Albuquerque. Or catch me on the Instagram. DrDOCTOR_NOV is my name on there. I'll be posting about Tramfest so you can let it touch your heart and your mind, and maybe your wallet if you
can
want.
You get the boys in merch to make one with one of the cars of the trams with a giant Novembrino mustache on it.
Yeah,
Tramfest.
The tram has a mustache on it, like the mustache and the goatee. Hell yeah, let's go.
Guitar lessons, DOCTOR_NOV.
That's also true. And then, let's end on the Tram Fest song. Tram Fest, Tram Fest. Everybody's talking about Tram Fest. Oh, it's Tram Fest, Tram Fest. Everybody's talking about it.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hola, hola, my name is Ricardo. I am the host of the Lucha Jobbers podcast here in the Voices of Wrestling podcast network. We are a Spanish-speaking show dedicated to discussing and analyzing pro wrestling from all across the world. From AEW to CMLL, we talk about American wrestling, Japanese wrestling, and of course, Lucha Libre. If something big happened in the pro wrestling world, we will talk about it. So if you know Spanish or have a friend that knows Spanish or want to practice your Lucha Libre pronunciations, go listen to the Lucha Jobbers podcast right here in the Voices of Wrestling podcast network. Nos vemos por ahí.